Hey guys, welcome back to Shakedown Shan. Hope you all had a great week. It's been very springy this week. Hallelujah. We have some pretty big topics to go through today. We will be talking about the opioid crisis, the war on drugs, just a little bit, antidepressants, linking them to school shootings, and the overdiagnosis of ADHD in children. Before we get on to that, though, I would like to say thank you to all my supporters. I this week reached 100 likes on my Facebook page. I have, I think, like 70 downloads right now, looking at my analytics here, and I've been reached in 13 states, and still have two listeners in Korea. That hasn't gone anywhere yet, but it's pretty cool to look at the colors on the map of the world. You got these colors over here in the U.S., and you just got this random little color over here in Korea. I wonder if they're like American people in Korea. But either way, I've had a lot of traffic on my Facebook page, a lot of people commenting their ideas, and I really think it's great. There's a lot of different ideas. I've been getting a lot of feedback too, people listening to the show. Someone told me that I should talk with my voice lower because they said it's really high-pitched and I sound like a child, but that's just, I look like a child too. And people are like, what, are you 12? I don't know if I can really do that. I think I'd have to be like really sick or something, come in with a cold to talk lower. I don't think I could talk like this the whole time. Yeah, maybe I could sound, get something like Stephen Hawking had and sound like him. He made songs and stuff with his voice thing. I don't really know what it's called. But anyway, I appreciate all the feedback that I've been getting. I really would like to get you guys to send me questions and stuff so I can try to answer your questions on here. And just shout you out a little bit. I've been getting a lot of like references to look at. People have been sending me books and stuff, talking to me about different views and everything. This somebody brought up to me agorism, and because he's a agorist, and so I'm looking into that right now because I don't know what it is and I've never heard of it, but it sounds really interesting. Not sure if I fall into the category, but I guess we'll find out. So my email address you can email me questions at is shakedownshanpodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit me up on Facebook. Those are two great ways. If I don't get back to you right away, I'm so sorry. I'm a pretty busy person. But anyway, I saw two deer in my backyard yesterday morning. They come around every single day, and I caught them in the daylight. I got a really nice video, and it's really cool living up in the woods around all these cool creatures. I saw a turkey on my way to work yesterday, and this morning I had a little bird on my windowsill outside. So it feels like spring. I feel like Snow White. Anyway, let's get into these topics today. So, big pharma. It's a pretty big topic. Big pharma, I really feel like, is the root cause of this opioid crisis. So, we definitely do have an issue going on here in our country with opioids, whether it be prescription or illegal. We'll get into why I think the illegal opioids are a problem in a minute here. But so this big pharma deal, we got these big pharmaceutical companies that are lobbying and contributing money to campaigns to push their own agendas. And let's see here. Pharmaceutical companies, they spend more than any other industry trying to influence politicians. They're always having to come up with new chemical compounds and medicines And these drug makers have poured close to $2.5 billion into lobbying and funding members of Congress over the past 10 years, which is a lot. So these drug makers, I mean, they are a business. They want to stay in business. They got to find profit somehow. Unfortunately, they're doing it at the cost of our lives. So the problem with opioids is, especially like the big ones like Pfizer and what was the other one? Purdue Pharma, I believe was the name. Let's see here. I can't find the name right now, but I'll come back to it. It sounded like the Chicken Nugget Company. Purdue Chicken or something like that, but it was Purdue Pharma. And so anyway, we got these big pharmaceutical companies, and they have these really, really strong opioids that they're actually 10 to 100 times more addictive than the street drugs. And so these are all legal. They're prescribing them to people. And I actually do have some statistics here for you, which are pretty interesting to look at. Let me just get them out. Prescribing rates. Okay, so, oh, that's not the one. So prescribing opioids had a super, super big increase from 2006 to 2011. Yes, it was a pretty steady increase. And then it spiked from 2011 to 2012. It went from about 72% of people prescribed painkillers to 81.3% per 100 people. And then, so we had this spike between those years. I'm trying to find the exact chart. Here it is. So then, as it spiked up like that, we had a spike in overdoses on these painkillers. All right, let's see. From 2011 to 2015, the overdose rate went up to 18,000. Let me find what this is based on. It was a 1.9-fold increase in the total number of deaths. So we see that the prescription rates of opioids slowly increased, and then it spiked. And then after that, it decreases. And then as that happens, a strange thing here happens with overdoses in heroin. So around 2002 to 2010, the overdose deaths involving heroin were relatively low compared to opioid painkillers. And that's because these people were being prescribed opioid painkillers. They didn't have to go out and find something else to take their pain away. And then we see, as right after the spike of prescribing opioids ends and it goes down, it decreases, heroin increases. The overdoses in heroin increases as soon as people, less and less people are being prescribed opioids. So what happened here is these pharmaceutical companies started prescribing so many, and these people got addicted within this 2-year time period. And then they stopped prescribing them so much because they saw that there was a problem. They're like, oh no, these things are super addictive, and we got to get people off these. We can't be prescribing them as much. But the problem with that, when you start taking people off of them, is that they, A, go through these terrible withdrawal symptoms. I don't know if you're addicted to coffee, but I am. And withdrawal from coffee is just ridiculous. I can't even imagine this withdrawal. So they go through these withdrawal symptoms, and they're still in pain. I mean, it's been 2 years. They're definitely still in pain from whatever they were on these medicines for. And so they go to the street to find the next best thing. And the problem with that is these are illegal drugs. So they don't know if they're going to be able to get it again the next day. So they end up overdosing on it because they're trying to get as much as they can possible in one sitting, and they're trying to collect as much as they can possible because they're not sure if it's going to be there tomorrow or the next day or whatever. And it's super hard to find. And, or, well, I don't know, might be easy to find, but
if you know where to go.
If you know where to go. I mean, I might have trouble finding it because I have no idea where to look. But anyway, you can't just hook people on a substance and then all of a sudden be like, oh my God, this is so addictive, and take him off so quickly, because what do you expect? They're going right to go find the next best thing. And unfortunately, now they have this addiction problem. And it all started because they were put on these drugs that these pharmacy companies even have just admitted to. They didn't know when they were putting people on these how addictive they were. There was no research into the addictiveness of them. And they just now, like recently, end of 2016, put labels, like, you know how cigarette packs have the warning labels right on them? They just put warning labels on these prescription bottles that they're highly addictive. So call me a conspiracy theorist here, but I'm about to get into a little bit of that. So I feel like these people, I mean, they're giving money to Congress and they're trying to stay in business and they're trying to lobby for the war on drugs because they want to stay in business. They don't want people to be able to go buy this cheaper version of a street drug or whatever. They want to keep the money in their pockets, which, I mean, their company, you can understand why they want to do that. But anyway, they're out here lobbying for the war on drugs because they want control of that market.
Right.
They're trying to control that market. And it's not even just the street drugs. Like, there's plenty of natural remedies. It's proven that there's natural remedies to pain killing. CBD oil is proven to be very, very
good at pain.
Yes. And unfortunately, many states don't allow it. A lot do, actually, though. I mean, they're coming around to it. But
now, you said that was a natural that oil was natural.
Yeah, CBD oil comes from cannabis. It's okay. It's just they put it into a pill form. They extract the THC. Mm-hmm. And it's like a fish oil pill.
Oh.
It's just a CBD oil pill. Mm-hmm. And you can take it, and it helps a lot, relaxing your muscles, relaxing your body where the pain may be. A lot of people take it for calming too, for like if you have anxiety.
Sure.
It could help with that. And these drug companies keep fighting for this war on drugs so they can yeah, keep the business with their painkillers.
You know, when you were talking to me about what, you know, the topics were today, I got online and I found an interesting article about the evils of Big Pharma. And one of the things that they mentioned was that it's a circle. What does it say here? Big Pharma is exactly the same story of how big government, big oil, big agrochem giants like Monsanto have come to power, because all the major shareholders in all those groups are major shareholders in pharmaceutical companies.
Yes, they are.
So it's a big circle, and they keep all big oil companies, you know, big pesticide companies, and that they also are heavily investing into the drug companies.
And so this is where my conspiracy kind of goes into. So I was saying that the pharmaceutical companies started increasing the prescriptions of opioids, and then they just decreased it. They knew, you just have to know that decrease is going to cause them to go find other means of getting what they're addicted to now, because you just prescribed them these opioids and then just all of a sudden took them off. So you know they're going to go to the streets and look for it and other things. I keep using heroin as my example, so I'll just continue with that. So they're going to the streets, they're looking for heroin, then there's this drug problem. So then they go to Congress, they're like, listen, we're giving you money to fight this war on drugs. See, there's a problem here. But that's a problem that you helped cause. You spiked the increase, got these people addicted,
right,
and then took them off. This was a way for you to fuel these people getting street drugs. So you could then go lobby for the war on drugs to keep money in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, you created a bigger problem than there was.
Right, they created the addicts.
Yes. And it's just crazy that we got these politicians, the opioid crisis is so bad, heroin's so bad. Yeah, it's a crisis. It is. And it's not these poor people that are just looking for a way out of reality. Yeah, that's a lot of it. But a lot of it has to do with there was this huge increase of being prescribed painkillers. Here, take Oxycontin for this. Here, take this will help you. And then instead of trying to find more natural ways to help the pain go away, they gave them more. They increased the prescription dosage for them or whatever. And then they just take them off. And so then that fuels them to go to the streets and find what they need, because now they're addicted to this.
Right. Also, they probably produce anti-withdrawal drugs, so that the addicts, if they want to withdraw, they have to take these withdrawal medicines that the pharmaceutical companies are creating too.
Yeah, it's this huge, crazy cycle. I've never liked medicine. I've always been a try to find my way. Like, I had bad allergies this morning. And I was told, oh, I'll take something for it. And I was like, no, I'll just sit it out. And now here I am. I'm fine. I was like sniffling this morning. My throat hurt. And I'm like, I'll go away soon. Just drink some water, get some honey, whatever. Actually, for allergies, local honey will help you, because it's your allergies to the stuff around you. So if you get local honey, it's from bees with local pollens. And so that helps counteract your allergies, which is interesting. So I try to buy some local honey during apple picking season. But anyway, so the, like I was saying, the big pharma creates the issue with street drugs, and then lobbies for the war on drugs that we just spend this ridiculous amount of money on. But anyway, moving on from opioids, which we could spend days and days and days and days talking about.
Well, that's another show. So.
We will definitely get into really, really deep topics. I want to throw some stuff out here for you guys, and then hopefully get into discussions with you all, maybe online or something. And then as we really get the show going, just start going deep into just one little rabbit hole. But for now, I want to throw some big ideas out here for you. So let's see here. Oh, wait, here's one other thing that goes with the opioids. That the headline is, after 20 years and many billions, Pfizer finally admits that opioids are addictive. Yeah, it took them this long. It took them 20 years to be like, oh, yeah, by the way, just so you know. All right, so let's talk about ADHD in children. First of all, this is how I feel about ADHD. It's a real thing. Some kids do have behavioral attention disorders. Most of the time, though, your kid is just a kid. They are very active. They are their mind is all over the place just because they're trying to learn everything that's around them. And I think people just don't want to deal with the brain of a child most of the time. And like, a lot of diagnosing ADHD comes from public school intervention. you get these teachers that are like, listen, your kid just won't sit still in class. Okay, yeah, well, he's six, and you have him sitting at a desk in this prison for 6 hours a day, telling him to look at the board. And you're telling me he has ADHD because he goes and looks at the squirrels out the window? He's more interested in outside, at the squirrels. He doesn't want to sit down and have to listen to you all day. Yeah, learning is important, but he doesn't just automatically have ADHD because he's looking at the squirrel out the window. I used to look at the squirrel out the window. I don't have ADHD. It's crazy. These kids are just kids. They're restless if they have to sit too long. And another thing is parents just, I mean, I'm not going to tell you how to parent your child or whatever, but some parents just don't do anything with their kids. They just want them to sit around, play games all the time, just be stimulated. I hate saying kids grow up with iPads in their hands, but they really do. My son is six. He's going on seven. He does have an Xbox. He does not have an iPad. He got a tablet for Christmas 1 year from a family member, and I was super, super mad. I was like, no, don't get him that, and they did anyway. And he never used it, really, mm-hmm. just only at grandma's house.
Oh, good.
So anyway, Noah does have an Xbox, and he is allowed to play games on the weekends or on school vacations, not during the school week. And during the winter, he'll play a lot on the weekends, but when it starts getting nice out, he kind of forgets about them because he likes to be outside. So I really think, like, games are definitely good. They're good for kids. It teaches them coordination and stuff like that, but you can't just have them on that all the time. And you have to do things with them. Noah and I are going to Sky Zone tomorrow to go. It's a trampoline park.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, these parents, they don't want to do anything with their kids. They don't want to get their energy out. And they're like, oh, they're bouncing off the walls. Crazy. Okay, it could also be something in their diet. I know red dye affects a lot of children. It affects a lot of their, like, hyperactiveness. And the stuff they put in our food nowadays can really, really mess with a child. So you kind of have to be careful what you're feeding them. But let's get into some statistics here because they're kind of shocking. I have statistics from 2016. So 9.4% of children ages 2 to 17 have ever been diagnosed with ADHD. That's in the United States from 2016. 9.4% of children. That's 6.1 million children. How are you telling me 6.1 million children have ADHD? That's insane. That I can't even believe that when I read it. So the bulk of these children are actually ages 12 to 17, which we'll get into with medication and school shootings in a minute. But anyway, moving on to the next page. Let's see here. So from 2003, or in 2003, the percent of children age 4 to 17 increased to 7.8, and then it went to 9.5 in 2007. And then in 2011 to 2012, it went to 11%. That's ages 4 to 17. And then, let's see, ages 2 to 5 increased more than 50% from the ages of 2007 to 2012.
Wow.
2 to 5. You're telling me you can tell me that a 2-year-old has ADHD? What do you mean? They can barely talk to you.
It sounds like it's a lack of, like you said before, a lack of interaction with doing different things.
Yes, people forget that kids are kids and that they're hyper.
Right.
That's what they are. They wake up, they don't stop till they go to bed. They, like, I used to My family used to tell me I wouldn't stop talking from the time I got up to the time I went to bed. No one put me on medicine. And no one was like, no, go sit in your room. But these medicines that they give people with ADHD, like, makes them a zombie, really.
Sure.
It makes them lose their appetite. Mm-hmm. It makes them super, super mellow. And I know this from firsthand experience because my little brother has been on ADHD and behavioral medicine since he was 3. And it's sad. I've always hated it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I don't really like medicine. And I feel like there's so many ways to deal with kids that actually do have ADHD. Because my brother, yeah, kids are hyper, but he is super, super hyper. And he's there. He does have a little bit of hyperactivity and behavioral issues going on, but there's other ways to combat it than saying, here, take this. And
the medicines have side effects too.
Terrible side effects.
Yeah.
Terrible. And especially when they start on these medicines so young and they're just on it their whole life. And the dosage has to be increased and increased and increased as they develop immunities to it. Going into the medicine rate here, where is it? The percent of all children 2 to 17 taking medication was 5.2% out of that 9.4. So over half of the kids 2 to 17 are on medicine. So let's see. Among children with... So that's among all children in the U.S. Those 5.2. Out of all the children diagnosed with ADHD, 62% of them are on medication. 62%. Ages 2 to 5, 18% of those kids diagnosed are on medicine. 18% of them. And then it goes up to 69% of ages 6 to 11. And then it goes down a little bit to 62, which is still crazy, of ages 12 to 17. And then, of course, there's behavioral treatment that they recommend you take coinciding with your medication treatment, which behavioral treatment can probably help a lot of these kids alone. They probably don't need medicine, too. So what was it? The American Academy of Pediatrics, the AAP, highly recommends medication therapy before anything. Why is that your first?
Right.
And like, here, take this magic pill.
Right. And, you know, like we had mentioned just a while ago with the side effects of the medicine, I mean, one of the side effects is irritability and moodiness. So here you have a child who you're giving medicine to that's going to make him moody and irritable, and you're in a close situation like a classroom or on a school bus, and now you've got a problem child because the medicine's making him moody and irritable, and that prolongs into something where he'll need another drug to combat the moodiness.
Then he gets depression.
Right.
And then, oh, he needs an antidepressant now.
Yeah.
He's just a walking pill bottle.
That's right. It's sad because some of these kids don't even need to be on it, like you were saying before. Get outside,
play ball. The power of air, fresh air, is incredible.
I mean, get into a sport if you're older. You know, I mean, do something where you keep yourself active. Yeah.
And just even interaction with your parents mm-hmm. can do a world of change. And you see a lot of these kids are kids that just aren't paid attention to. They start getting hyper and stuff because they want attention. Yeah. It's usually just a cry for you to look at them, to do
something.
Well,
like you said, I mean, they're left alone to play TV or to watch TV or to stay inside sheltered, and they're not learning anything about what's outside or anything, interaction with friends or whatever. And I mean, when I was growing up, we were outside all the time. Our parents had to drag us in to have supper.
Yeah, it was come home when the street lights come on for
right,
me.
Right. Well, that's it. And it's like, and we didn't mind that. We were outside all the time.
Yeah, I used to ride my bike around. I used to go on bike rides through town and stuff. My dad's like, well, just make sure you're home by dark.
Yeah.
And I used to go to the park with friends. And it's crazy that kids don't do these things anymore.
Nope.
And they say, oh, because it's so dangerous out. Well, okay, well, teach your kids some like self-defense. Teach them how to act in a situation like mm-hmm. that. Then you can't be scared of the world or you're going to be shut inside all the time.
Right, on drugs.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's going to create a problem when they're an adult, too. They're going to get into drugs because all they've known is their whole life right. is drugs, is medicine. And so this is a really, really interesting fact. Okay, so before I get into the really, really interesting fact, one out of 10 children received neuro treatment, which is to do with their neurological system. It's probably interesting. I should look into what they really do for that.
Mm-hmm.
But only one out of 10 received it, and only 2 out of 10 had dietary treatment, which is just ridiculous. Mm. It should be 8 out of 10.
Sure.
You should look at what's in their diet. You should look at what they're doing in their life, like see their activities. Try to do all that before you integrate medicine into it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Okay, so the really, really interesting fact. Children ages 2 to 5 covered by Medicaid, which is a government-funded health insurance plan, were twice as likely to receive clinical care for ADHD and medication compared to similar age children covered by commercial employer-sponsored insurance. That's insane. So these people that are in need of assistance with their health care, the government is... Okay, so these... I'm so sorry, this is just...
No, it's a very... It's confusing, like, because a lot of this doesn't have to happen. And
no,
you get frustrated when you talk about it.
I do get frustrated about this because these people that are on a government program, for whatever reason, they're twice as likely to be diagnosed with ADHD. And so basically the government is taking these people that rely on them and drugging them up. It's just insane
mm-hmm.
that you're... So what makes these people twice as likely to be diagnosed with ADHD than other children with commercial employer-sponsored insurances? It's why we shouldn't have the government in charge of our healthcare.
Yeah, you're right.
Because then they're like, they tell these people, you need to diagnose X amount of people with this.
Mm-hmm.
And prescribe X amount of Y drug to these people. They're on we're paying for it, so we want you to do this to them.
And you would hope today that doctors would be a little more concerned with testing.
You'd think so.
For ADHD or ADD, rather than just prescribing a medicine. I mean, you know, you don't want that to be the first case, like you said. I mean... Let's get into the child's diet and his social activities. And then there are people that do have ADHD, but that should come later.
Yeah, let's find
medicate them later.
Some kind of therapy, like music therapy or art therapy. See what they're into.
Right.
Find out what they like to do and use that as a form of therapy. And an outlet for them. So that's my spiel on ADHD in children. I think it's absolutely... So you were saying that it's these big corporations are just...
It's like a circular motion, yeah.
They get bribed, actually. This goes back to opioids, too. They get bribed to sell a certain amount, like they get rewards
for
selling.
Big rewards.
Huge rewards. Why do you think doctors are like the richest people?
Well, it's not only that. It's not the doctors that, I don't think they get rewards for selling it, but they get, when you go to the doctors and you see these pharmacy reps there. I mean, first of all, the pharmacy reps are making huge money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And they'll go in and leave their samples with the doctors, all right? And but probably if the doctor gives you a sample on something, I mean, I'm sure there's a tracking way that the pharmacy, you know, who they know who the doctor prescribed it in that. But it's the pharmacy companies that are making the outrageous amounts of money.
And they reward doctors for prescribing X amount of their drug. And it's just, it's not right to be pushing these kind of things onto people.
I mean, I know somebody that's a nurse, and like drug reps come in every day of the week. Well, they buy lunch for the whole office every day of the week, one of the reps. Mm-hmm. I mean, each rep from different companies. So they're giving the offices lunch, you know, and who knows, like holiday time, what they give them.
Wine and dine.
So if they've got the money to do this, why can't they use that money to lower the drugs, the price of drugs, number one, for people need them. And two, doctors should be made to, they take an oath to do no harm. So when you prescribe ADHD medicine to
a kid that 3-year-old doesn't really need it,
I mean, that's doing harm, I think, and if you haven't checked off a list before.
Yeah. And also to my listeners, I don't want to make it seem like I'm bashing doctors, because doctors are great. We need them.
Oh, yeah.
I know a few doctors, but it's the big pharmacy companies that I'm bashing, and that these doctors, they get this idea that if they sell certain companies drugs more, they're going to get this reward, and their family probably really needs it. So money talks. But doctors are great, and just sometimes not so great.
That's right.
We do need them. Still on the topic of drug overdoses, I just want to throw a few facts out here for you, because they were interesting and I came across them. Can you guess what state is the top state in drug overdose deaths?
Is that per capita? or just number?
What was this?
I'll bet you it's per capita.
It's got to be per.
All right, I'm going to say Alaska.
You know what? I asked somebody else that, and they said Alaska too. No,
it's
not Alaska.
Wow.
You would think so. I think they have the most suicides.
It could be, because I know it's like
they're very depressed up there.
Women are all the time depressed, and
they
drink alcohol quite a bit.
Yeah,
they
have these like happy lights, them, that they like bathe in. Number one is West Virginia with 52% of their deaths are drug overdoses.
Wow.
Number two is Ohio, coming in at 39%. Number three is New Hampshire at 39%. Four, Pennsylvania, 37%. Five, Kentucky, 33%. Maryland comes in at number six with 33%. Massachusetts comes in at number seven with 33%. And these are all like 33.5, 0.2. So number eight is Delaware at 30. And I don't know why I didn't go to 10, but I stopped at 8.
Mm-hmm. That's enough.
Somebody was like, oh, New York's got to be up there, because, you know, we have this huge heroin problem, especially in Saratoga. Saratoga's been having a really, really bad heroin problem, and Balsam Spa, too.
But see, if it's per capita, New York State has so many people in it, like California does, that, you know, you could have 1,000 deaths a day, and it it would affect it, but not to the extent of, like, New Hampshire and Kentucky. You know, I mean, there's what, 7.5 million people down Westchester County to the island, and that's a lot of people. So, but some of those states really are surprising, like Ohio and
New York comes in at 18%.
18.
So that puts them relatively low on the scale here. I couldn't believe West Virginia was 52.
Yeah.
Let's see, I didn't find the lowest. I should have found the lowest. Let me just skim through here real quick. Looks like Nebraska comes in at the lowest with 6.4.
Wow. Well, that's a more rural area too.
Yeah.
You know?
It's kind of in the middle of the country. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's move on to antidepressants and mass shootings. I strongly believe they're linked, strongly. And you know what? You never hear the media say a word about it. And why? Because we said that these big pharmacy corporations are lobbying the government, giving them money, paying Congress members for campaigns and stuff to push their agenda. So antidepressants are well overprescribed.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, because just like ADHD, the first things you should be doing is trying to find other ways. Like these, because they have serious side effects. Have you ever seen a commercial on the TV or something of, oh, what is it, Zoloft or something? The thing with the green butterfly.
Oh, yeah.
What is that?
I know what you're saying, and there's so many new ones now that it's not funny.
You see commercials for them, and they're like, side effects could be suicidal thoughts,
yeah,
worse depression, homicidal thoughts is now a, that's a side effect,
that's
homicidal
right.
thoughts. And you got these, okay, so these mass shooters, I looked into it, they were all on an antidepressant,
yeah,
whether it be Celexa, Effexor, Zoloft, all these, it makes me so frustrated that nobody seems to take this correlation and put it in the media. You're never going to hear it. It's always, oh, there were these troubled people and that the guns are the problem. No, mm-hmm. It's probably that they're walking pill bottles.
Right.
They're walking pill bottles.
Well, I'll tell you, if you saw the news last week, it was pretty funny because we're trying to ban guns from people here in the U.S., and in London, they ban knives.
Mm-hmm.
So
they did.
That's like a crazy thing.
That is
crazy thing. You got so they because see handguns aren't real popular over in England. I mean, you know, we fought for the right to in the Revolutionary War to be able to bear arms.
Yeah, we're the crazy Americans and, with guns.
Right, and we But anyway, they're banning knives in London, and they can stop vehicles without cause. I mean, so they can profile where we can't profile here in the U.S. Our police aren't allowed to profile. And it I think it just goes to show you that the highest percentage of people that commit homicides, like you said, are on antidepressants, or they're
yes.
on some sort of medicine.
Yeah, with these crazy side effects.
That affects their judgments. Now, see, I have bipolar. I don't care who knows this, but I mean, there is a chemical imbalance that needs to be balanced out by medication. But I never once, because it brings me to a normal place, I never once even thought about either committing suicide or going out and shooting somebody, because they ask you that, like when you go for a review of your medicines, you know, have you had suicidal thoughts? I said, no. And how about, you know, homicidal thoughts? No. But there are people, I think, that get these medicines that really don't need them, and it really messes up their balance.
Yes. Yep. They overdiagnose these people, and so they just don't really need them. I myself, I've been on antidepressants before. Like I said in my first episode, I struggled in eating disorder for a long time. I mean, it's something I still struggle with every day because you never really get rid of it. But I did spend some time at Four Winds, and not by my choice. It was like against my will. I was like, 16. So it was like my parents' decision, and actually the school forced my parents to, mm-hmm. which is a whole nother topic that we can get into because it's just ridiculous. So when I was there, they put me on medicine, and I hated how it made me feel. And one other time in my life I've been on them, and it was only for like a month because I got into this huge depression series in my life. And I'm like, I can't snap out of it. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll give this another go. And like before, it was the same exact feeling. I was so like, I felt loopy. It made me airheaded, mm-hmm. and just like so like dizzy and sick. And I just didn't feel myself. I felt so like numb. I had no emotions. I couldn't be happy or anything. I was just like a white wall. That's how my personality felt, and I'm like, no, screw this. So anyway, when I was on them the first time, it wasn't too long before I just stopped taking them, and I was like, no, this, I don't like medicine. I don't agree with how it makes me feel. I can find other ways. And so anyway, all of these school shooters have been on SSRI antidepressants. And like I said, one of the side effects is homicidal thoughts.
Or may cause death. I mean, that's like yes, the last
that's
one.
That's another one.
That's a funny one.
Could, like, why would you even take the chance? But it's crazy that these shootings are happening, and they're saying, oh, it's this epidemic, and this goes right along with the opioid thing. We got this heroin epidemic, mm-hmm. going on, okay, caused by big pharma,
right?
And now we got these school shooting problem going on, okay, caused by big pharma. Like, can we not see the common theme here?
Well, you know, you had mentioned about the opiates and that. Have you ever had an operation where you had to take like oxycodone or whatever?
Because I've been lucky enough to not have to have any.
Well, I had shoulder surgery, and of course, you know, I mean, that's a killer. And I took one of the pain pills when I got home. I could not stand the way they made you feel. So after I took one, that was the first day I took one, and after that I took Tylenol. I just could not stand it made you feel like you weren't even in control of anything. And I said, I can't be that way. So I don't know, anybody can get addicted to those things, because boy, you gotta be not want to be part of anything, just gap out.
Well, a lot of them start off on low dosages, mm-hmm. and they get this kind of like this body high, and it feels cool to them. But then after a while, you don't get it. And so you have to increase
the
dosage. And that's when the addiction starts coming in.
Yeah.
But like doctors will increase the dosage because they'll go to the doctor and they'll be like, you know, it's not really helping me. And they're like, oh, I'll just take, we'll prescribe you a higher dosage.
Yeah.
And a lot of them like aren't even just increasing their dosage themselves. They go and their doctor suggests it.
Sure.
And
I mean, I do have to say, it stopped the pain.
Oh, definitely.
But I couldn't stay awake. When I was awake and I looked at TV, the TV kept moving. So I had to keep bobbing my head. And I mean, it made you feel big-headed. And I'm saying to myself, and people enjoy this? I mean, that's it, you know?
I just think there's so many more natural ways we could try to fight pain, yeah. that if we were allowed to, I know holistics,
uh-huh.
I was going to contact a holistic that I don't know her personally, but I know her brother. And so I was going to have him contact her before the show, and I couldn't get a hold of her. I was going to ask for some, specific roots. Holistics take like roots of plants, and that's how they make their medicine. They make natural medicine, but they run into problems all the time with the government, and certain plants are illegal to use the roots of. And it's just, it's crazy, A, that the government can tell you that you can't put something in your body, but B, these people are trying to find natural ways, which would A, be more or less expensive, because it wouldn't have all these chemicals and compounds in these pills. That's why they're so expensive, because they got to have chemists make them. Whereas holistics go and they find these roots of plants that come out of the ground. You could plant these things. And they run into problems all the time trying to, what they'll do is they'll find a medicine, like a pill or something, and they'll try to see if there's any kind of plant base in it. And then they try to go get that plant and use it, if they, or use the root of it. But some of them are illegal to use the roots of.
Right. And, you know, we were talking before the show about a prescription drug and a generic drug. And most of the time, if a doctor puts you on a prescription drug and then the company comes up with a generic drug, the insurance won't cover the prescription drug. But the generics don't always work like the prescription does.
No.
Because they put different fillers in, and the fillers could have a reaction with you, and they just, they won't let you have the regular drug that they researched and came up with. You've got to take the generic if there's a generic available. And I mean, if a drug's not working just because it's a generic drug, they should let you take the original drug. But it's all the fillers that they put in for the generics that can change the drug. And but like you said, it boils down to big companies, big government. You know, it's all a circle. They're controlled by money. The politicians are controlled by money. And, you know, if you can cut some of that out, I mean, I think it would solve a lot of problems.
Definitely. And like I said, we need to stop telling people they can't use a root of a plant.
I know.
To come up with a more inexpensive or less expensive. Yeah, it's the same thing. Less expensive way to get the same result as a painkiller.
So grow your own
and
plant.
And that's natural.
You know.
Yeah. So many problems that you run into. It's like you try to do something and then you just, you're stopped by government, stopped by these big companies fooling around with government.
Because they're not making money.
Exactly. And people confuse that all the time with, oh, big companies are bad. No, big companies, when they get involved with government, are bad. Big companies not involved in government aren't necessarily bad.
Right.
It's when the two get together, and that's crony capitalism, not capitalism. But anyway, I have to wrap things up. And so it was a great discussion today. And I'm really excited to go on to the next show next week. And I hope to see all these numbers keep going up. I really, really do enjoy all the conversation that you guys have on the page and sending me stuff. It's really interesting. So I hope you all have a good weekend. I hope you all have a good week. Thank you for listening. Positive vibes, guys.